Oh,
la, la, la.
What's today's date? With the 9th of July.
Yes, it's the 9th.
The 9th.
Yeah.
We're on our kind of break, but we're not on a break because we're still working.
Yeah.
So I can't drink this because it's not the sweet spot. You know what I'm like. This is history.
Yep.
But we're so lucky. Oh, we can.
We are so lucky to see you and have you here.
You're in the country. You're in the country. You're in town.
Yeah.
You're free.
I'm free.
I know.
I'm very happy to be involved in this.
And this is Brooke Tate, everybody. Brooke Tate. Our town has plenty of talent. Oh, God. And a thoroughly nice man.
Thanks,
Pat. Yeah, darling. Tell us then. So you've had a whirlwind of a time, haven't you?
Mm. Yeah.
You can start wherever you like.
Well, I guess I'll just go backwards. So I've just got back from Nepal, which is where I was over winter and spring. Mm-hmm. And I got back a month ago. And it's, to be honest, it's so nice to be back here. I didn't realise quite how much I would miss St. Leonard's. Mm. When I was having an amazing adventure and in these incredible places. But often I'd be like, oh, I just miss the seaside. Mm. I really miss the seaside. Mm. And it's really made me, I think, being here over last summer and just re-meeting the town as what it has become. Mm. And so much going on. And also just the horizon. And even just when I came back, I was like, this view is actually very rare. Like, it's actually a very, very beautiful thing to see, the sea in that way, without any, like, interruptions.
Yeah.
It's really amazing. Yeah, so I'm so happy to be back.
Mm. Oh, nice. Oh, welcome back to the manor.
Yeah.
So what's been happening? Because there are people who know Brooke and know of Brooke. There are people who don't know Brooke at all.
Mm.
So if you were going to explain what you've been up to and all your exciting plans and news and everything. Mm-hmm. You can start wherever you like.
Yeah, I guess last year when I came back to Hastings and St. Leonard's, as everyone's quite specific now.
I know, yes, you had to say the extra bit.
Yeah, never.
And it's not extra, it's
never used
it's
to be.
Equal.
Yeah, never used to be. I came back and I did lots of performing as Deborah the Zebra, which lots of people might have heard of, and I did this big show and it was kind of interesting because I came back to visit my parents who live just around here. Mm. And because of what had happened in the past, I hadn't really felt like I wanted to be part of St. Leonard's and Hastings because of my background and just stuff that had happened. And then, but for the last, like over the last decade, I'd been in Bristol and Ireland and like developing as a, just finding out what I love to do. Mm. And I had developed this performance and this show with a band, and it was a musical, and these characters such as Deborah the Zebra, which everyone kind of, anyway, lots of people in Bristol kind of got to know. And and then I was like, when I came back last year, I was like, I actually really want to share it with Hastings, with St. Leonard's, because I've
never seen it.
So quickly got, and I was like, but I had already felt like my time of becoming Deborah the Zebra, like when I actually literally transformed into Deborah the Zebra, was kind of not coming to an end forever, but I'd gone through this period of time in Bristol when it exploded, and it was giving me so much to transform into Deborah the Zebra and perform and tell the story. And after like 3 years of doing that, I'd got to a point where I was like, oh, it's wearing out on it's wearing me out.
Yes.
And it was literally, I decided, we did a show in London last year in a big theatre, and I woke up one morning, I was like, that's it, that's the end, I've finished.
It done it up.
It had done it up.
Yeah.
It had really done its arc, and I was like, oh, this is actually really emotional, because it's tied with real personal stuff. It's not just me turning into a zebra. Mm-hmm. So I told my band, I was like, this is the end of birthmarks for now. And we had one more gig in Hastings, and I was like, we'll do that as the last time. So we came back and did it in Henry Ward Hall with Mike Willis. It was so magical. It was so magical for like, it was magical for me, it was magical for my parents, it was magical for the room. And because I was like, wow, just in time, I've landed this performance, and this character and this story has got me to a point where I feel safe enough to perform it and tell it in my hometown, which is somewhere where really before I didn't even have a voice.
No.
So it had gone from silence to complete explosion. So
do you feel you healed by doing that?
Oh, completely. I mean, are we ever healed fully? But as in, like,
no, I mean, in that chapter,
massively, and it's really made me think. Even while I was doing it, I was like, wow, this is like art fair. I thought I was just telling a story and having fun with my band and performing. Yeah. But very quickly, I was like, wow, I'm really, my energy is changing in different ways. I was getting exhausted, but I was emotionally much more able to cope with stuff. Yeah. And
liberating.
Yeah, it was really liberating. And also having other people going, wow, you've really inspired me to start doing drag or writing this and da, da, da. So yes, it has really helped me heal from it. Mm. But then also that, what was not expected is what came from it, which is what I'll talk, which is so unexpected. Yeah. And that's where I've just come back from this. What came from it, this maths thing, had led me to Nepal, which sounds bonkers, but yes. So that's the exhibition that I did. That's one of them.
That's just one.
And then
this man is an absolute.
And then there's this one.
Astonishing.
Oh, wow.
So, and it's nice when Kathy said that you didn't see the show. And you didn't
know that's
really
right.
Yeah,
I'm kind of catching up. I did watch the Henry Ward Hall piece that's on YouTube, and you can see it. And I thought, wow, that is epic, you know, in its power. And we've met, you know, a little bit. So I knew that much. And I know from Patsy's energy about you that, you know, it's an exciting thing to have you here. But no, I don't know anything about this at all. It's really exciting to see and to hear, what happens after a big, I suppose, genesis like that, where you've done something, you've landed it, you've had the whole butterfly experience, and now you're somewhere completely different.
Completely different. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Shall I just tell you what it is? So when I'd been doing Deborah the Zebra, I started having dreams. My dreams got so vivid, and this was like in 2023, and I'd like wake up from I'd have these super vivid dreams, and it was kind of like I was half asleep, so I could kind of control a bit, like lucid dreaming. Nice. Not really, I knew what that was. And then I always journal. I'd write loads of stuff down, and I started drawing these patterns that I was seeing in dreams, and these stories, and a whole story of Deborah the Zebra. One morning, I woke up at like 5 a.m. and I was like, my heart was pounding. I was like, oh my God, I'm having a panic attack. And I was like, oh no, I'm actually really excited about something. And I was like, I think I know the story of Deborah the Zebra, which I hadn't really written because she was just something that I became from Brooke to Deborah, but I didn't know where she came from. Mm. So I started writing this story, and that led to this whole poetic other universe where she experienced something similar to me, but in the animal kingdom, and how that affected her and how she became and what journey she went on. And long story short, she meets a flamingo who's lost all of his feathers and is like really wants to fly again. So he's collected loads and loads of feathers, and she offers to carry him up the mountain so that he can make the wings and jump off and fly. Aww. So she goes up and she meets all these other animals on the way, and she gets to the top, and then she ends up being the one that gets given the wings, the feathers, and she kind of builds this courage to fly back to her family who have asked her to leave. Mm. And they tie an elephant's horn to her head, and actually I'll show you. So they tie an elephant's horn.
Oh, wow. That's lovely.
She ends up.
So is it Deborah who gets the horn? Who gets the wings?
Wings. Yes. Mm. So that's the.
Oh, wow.
So, and this is just me. This is me like sketching it down just to. Because I realized that Deborah wasn't going anywhere. I wasn't, although I wanted to pull back on performing her, she's such a part of my life. And I think she's been such a powerful character for me.
Strong chapter.
Yes, such a strong chapter. I've learned so much from having that kind of perspective of a character. So I thought, I need to capture her and put her in the world where I think she will live longer, and that is in books, picture books.
Wonderful.
So I'd start painting this down, and they tie an elephant's horn to her head, and she gets these wings, and she jumps off the mountain, and then she flies, and she splits the sky apart, and she explodes the universe into, and she just explodes. And then she crosses the fabric of her universe and ends up in our universe. And then we meet. So I made up this story, and I was like, oh, now I know where Deborah the Zebra has come from and how she came into our universe. So she's come from that one, but she's come into ours. But I was like, but I don't know how I can explain that logic. And then I was like, I think the only, the one thing that unites all universes is maths.
Yeah.
But I hated maths and I was so bad at maths. So Deborah the Zebra led me. I followed a zebra, which is what this book, and I've ended up calling this book Following a Zebra, because I just followed her. I was like, well, she's become maths. I need to learn maths.
Okay.
So that's what led me to it. And then I, and there's a video on YouTube called A Rather Bonkers Story, which is my, on my YouTube, and Mod's Kind of Maths on Monroe Island. And that'll expand the story more. But basically, Kath, I counted the main kind of, I wanted to learn to do maths. So I bought a normal maths book, and which used numbers, like written numbers as you have. And I just could not see the joy in it. I was like, I cannot see this, this beauty that everyone says maths is. But I was like, I need to do it. And I'd gone to India and I jumped in a lake and I'd cut my foot open so I couldn't walk. And I was on this little island called Monroe Island. And I was like, well, I can't walk. I'm literally just sat down. I need to take this
forced
time.
To
I was
be
literally
still.
For the first time in my life, really forced to be still. I was like, well, I may as well just keep following this idea. And then I had, this was the moment that I thought, where's it gone? There it is. So I counted the main colours that we have in my little painting set. And we have white, black, brown, pink, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, and purple. And outside of those colours, the names of colours get quite fancy, like teal, magenta, I don't know, beige or something like this. Whereas these ones are very strong, clear colours. And I was like, that's 10 perfectly bold colours that we recognise. And as far as, would you agree? Or,
well, agree,
or can you think of a colour outside of those that is not fancy?
No, not really, no.
So the one colour that I thought, oh, maybe I've made it up, is pink, because it was like, oh, it's just a light red. But like going through like art history.
Is it just that?
What?
Is pink just
I think
light red?
This is what, this is what's really fascinating now, that through human history, we've developed language to say, to recognise different colours. And there's still some areas in the world, some small like cultures that don't recognise blue as a colour, but they recognise like seven different greens. They have so many words for different greens. So, and they don't really see the blue because there's no word for it. So it's really fascinating that in history's time, as we've developed languages to and words
to identify
all these colours. And we've arrived at a point where there are 10. So when I realised that, I was like, oh my gosh, surely there's a way to do maths without looking at the numbers.
Yes.
And just use the colours. So I started like scribbling out loads and loads of like patterns. And this is a bit of a nicer book because I've got an older scrappy one. But like this is what the sort of patterns I was doing. And it's all maths. But I'd had this, I was asleep in India, in like a little bunk bed in a hostel where I, in the place that I stayed, ended up staying there for 2 months. And there was a Hindu festival going on in the temple just nearby. And every morning at 5 a.m, they would start singing. So it was like it's half asleep. And again, my dream got like infected with it, or like woken by it. And I had this dream that I walked into a gallery and there were all these paintings on the wall that looked like this. But my painting style is very much like realistic, like these birds or like, and there's the a painting, it's like definitely some portraits. And there's a picture of a girl that you so kindly supported me with from the exhibition last year. This girl that I painted in Bristol when I first moved there, a girl called Hannah. And I had this blue bead, this turquoise bead on an earring because this little bead was on a bracelet of my niece's that I dearly love. So I, and she stopped wearing it. So I took it and put on an earring and now it's on my ring. And I put that turquoise bead behind this girl's head and it all just came together.
Stunning.
And that picture started my journey into that world of art. So anyway, so that was my style of drawing, painting, and very realistic. And there's a picture of an Indian man that really was a big part of my life as well. And but when I had this dream, I went into this gallery and there were these paintings like this, like they were so abstract and very like, they were more pattern based.
Yeah.
And I was in this dream, I was like, these are my paintings, but I don't paint like this. What are these paintings? And then there was one on the wall and I walked up to it and I melted into this painting. And I sound mad, but I melted into the painting. I dissolved into the painting and floated above Bristol. Mm-hmm. And I could see the roof of this gallery. And then I saw Bristol and then I saw England and then I saw the planet. And then I floated into space and all of these dribbling patterns like that one, like floated down below me over the planet. And it was a bit like Joseph in the Technicolor Dreamcoat, but like in space, like, wow! And I just like snotted as I said that. Anyway, I floated up into space and I woke up and I was like, that's maths. I was like, maths can be done like that.
Yeah.
And even that, every time I tell a story, I'm like, I sound so bonkers, but it's true. That's what happens.
Yeah, it's another language.
It's just, it's such a simple language. Mm. So I'll show you, Kath,
how it
works. And I'm still, what's amazing is that I'm still learning about it as I go.
This is Kath's world.
Yeah, really.
I love
this kind of thing.
I love it.
The endless journaling.
Yes.
I love it.
Where is it? Oh, it's here. So this, ooh, and this book is what I took around Nepal. Mm. So if you ignore that bit.
Yeah.
So they're the colours. Mm-hmm. What colours at the bottom? What was that one?
Oh, that's three.
Yeah, three. Yeah. And then this expanding balloon of orange.
Well, I can see. I'm cheating here. That's five.
It's fine. Oh, yeah, you can. I never test anyone. Right, you can always see this because it's like the idea is that you just reduce stress all the time.
Yeah, sure.
There's no test in it.
Thank you.
So there's no point is that you're challenged with your intelligence. Mm. So it's just a pattern recognition. Mm, so that's three, mm-hmm, and then plus five. And in any way that you need, you could count on your fingers or you could just count your head. You can just find a way to get there.
I would do it with my fingers. Eight.
Eight.
Three plus five.
So what colour would the...
Now that would be blue.
So that is blue. So it's so... That's it.
That's so cool.
So three plus five is eight. And in my mind, it went up like a flower grows. Because logically, I was like, if I'm adding, I'm growing. Mm-hmm. So then I could grow up. Nice. But then I realized it can go in any direction. So you could go 3 + 5 is eight. Mm-hmm. 3 + 5 is 8. 3 + 5 is 8. 3 + 5 is 8. Because of the way that the balloon goes.
Yeah.
And then I realized, like looking at it upside down, I can go 8 - 5 is 3. Plus
Lovely.
5 is 8, - 5 is 3.
That's so cool.
And the triangle represents multiplication. And I'll just read this one.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 3 mm-hmm. multiplied by 6, so it's yellow,
mm-hmm.
is 18. And the 8 is in the middle, mm-hmm. and the 1 is on the outside. So that's 1, 8.
I love that you've bent the 1 round.
Yeah, it just goes, and it means that you can read it in any direction.
The rim round the outside, isn't it?
The 1 just turned into a circle.
Oh,
and it's like they're holding each other. And then that's 3 times 3 times 6 is 18, divided by 2 is 9, divided by 3 is 3, times 6 is 18, divided by 2 is 9, times 2 is 18, divided by 6 is 3.
Oh my goodness.
And then, and it was only after painting them, I was like, is this real? I was like, is that true with maths? Like, you can go in any direction. And my maths was so limited that I just didn't realise that you could go backwards, mm-hmm. that you could divide things by what you'd multiplied them and get the same answer.
Mm-hmm.
So it like blew my mind.
Yeah.
And then literally I came back to St. Then, wrote that book because I met, whilst I was in India and I was like doing all these sketches, this lady was like, she was from England and she was in her like 70s and she was traveling with her daughter and she just so happened to pass by and I showed her my drawings and I explained it to her and she was like, where did you get this idea? I was like, I think I've made it up. And she was like, I've been a maths teacher for 40 years in England. I've never seen this. You need to write a book about it to copyright it.
Yeah.
So I made that one.
Yeah.
And then that's the link with St. Leonard's. So just before I'd found out that Alan Turing grew up as a child around the corner.
He did.
And discovered all about his like his story, his homosexuality and the way he was treated, but what an incredible mind he was. And I wrote him a letter that said, Dear Alan, I can't stop thinking about maths, but I need to do it and I paint and dance and write music. Do you think one of those things can help me learn maths? That was before I went to India. Then a couple of weeks later, I had the dream. And then I dedicated the book to Alan Turing. It's Alan Turing there.
Yes.
And then
8-year-old you. Oh.
You can read it now. You can read the colours. And I brought the book back to England, gave it to a friend in Bristol, and showed it to her, and she was like, you need to give it to Bristol University, the maths department. So I gave it to the maths department. They looked at it, and they were like, have you done this? I was like, I don't know. And they said, we want you to present it at the British Society of Research into Learning Mathematics.
Yeah.
So then, and they were like, you can apply. So I wrote my submission. And then the day that I submitted it and gave the presentation was Alan Turing's anniversary of his death.
No.
How bonkers is that? Isn't that crazy?
Well, it
that
sounds spooky, but it's not, because it's synchronicity.
Yeah.
It's all synchronized. And that's the thing about math. We get scared of it.
Mm.
But actually, when you embrace it and you become friends with math, it's... Oh, I'm getting shivers. It synchronizes.
Yeah, it's a pattern.
It stops us feeling outside of it, and we become inside maths. Mm. We realize.
That's really lovely. And this is a real... It's a door. It's a flow of shapes and colors that will allow people who don't normally feel like they can walk through that door to do so. Definitely, I can feel that. Yeah. I really want to show it to my son. I think he'll love it. Thank
Hopefully.
You. Amazing. Yeah.
I mean, I'm just sort of like,
that's so cool,
exploring it. And it, they're not like, these books are just made. I've made it all myself. Mm-hmm. I haven't had any guidance from a maths sort of teacher or anyone.
Yeah.
I'm just following the journey that I've made. Mm. But hopefully, as it develops, which it very quickly is developing, I'll have like professional educators or like educational psychologists go, maybe let's like use this one. Maybe this is a bit too overwhelming. Maybe we can have different versions.
Can I ask you, what happened when you went and you
presented it? I was quite nervous, but I was like, I just kept thinking, and I took my giraffe stuff, and I took all the things that I love as well, and I took loads of crayons. Yeah. And I was like, I'm gonna stand out like anyway. I may as well probably stand out. Yeah. And I had like a nice colourful waistcoat. And I gave this presentation.
Oh, you wore your waistcoat.
Yeah, I wore this nice waistcoat, and which was made out of a hammock that I was like I'd sit in and made the mats in India because it broke, and I made it into my mum made it into a waistcoat. And I went. And at first, they were a bit like, I've got the talk on YouTube as well. And they go, this is Brooke Tate, and he's going to talk about colours. And that was how they introduced it, because they didn't really know what to say. They're always going to talk about colours. By the end of it, there was this lady, she was sat down, and they were just like, the response was so cool. And they were like, this is amazing. And one of them were like, oh, you're doing really, really important work. And I was like, wow, okay, cool. And then one woman was like, I was like, yeah, so it's been a great adventure and I've had a lot of fun or something like that. I said something like that. And there was a woman sat down in front, she was like, you're not finished yet, mate. And she just said it really seriously.
Yeah.
And afterwards she was like, no, this is just beginning.
Yeah.
And then that really spurred me on. So then I came back and I wanted to release it, like release the book in St. Leonard's because of like it's my hometown, and also Alan Turing. Started doing workshops, learned so much about how it works, getting so much feedback. And then
you did it with children.
Yeah, children and adults. I did like adult classes and children's classes. And and then I felt like I needed to go back to India because I felt like something else was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel I'm not, because this is going on the internet, I can't show you on this camera, but I can show you after.
Yeah.
Because it's very exciting where this has gone beyond maths.
Sure.
So into the sciences, which just made sense. And now I love chemistry. Well, I've just told you. I can't show you how. But it's so exciting. And it literally just came out. It's like, it's just a code. So then, and then I was like, I'm in Nepal. Then I was... I met this really beautiful, very enthusiastic Spanish man, and I taught him the maths. I was like, this is amazing. This is revolutionary. You need to teach this all over the world. I'm going to go and teach it in Brazil. And then, and he had just got back from Everest, and he was like, he just had this idea. He was like, you should go and teach this in the schools around Everest. I was like, no. I was like, really? And I was like, the most walking I do is along the seafront and up West Hill at a push. And I was even when I go like, you know, the steps, I'm like, oh God. Anyway, and then I was like, no. And it helped that he was so beautiful. And
I'm sure
we were in a very hot country and he had his top off. And I was like, you're so beautiful.
Do you know what? Yeah, I'll go anywhere.
I'll go anywhere. If you tell him, tell him to go to the moon, I'll go. I was like, right, well, I better get to Nepal then. So I got up there and then I was still quite nervous. And I was like, is this going to work? And I started contacting all of the schools that are in the Solukhumbu region where the mountains, like in Nepal, and you like these villages that are so remote and off the tracks, and like there's no roads for cars, so you have to hike everywhere. Got there, and And then I got an email from this organization for, called Classroom in the Clouds with this really lovely woman.
That
and she was like,
perfect name.
"We've like, would you be around to teach our teachers to do teacher training?" So
go.
Then I just started teaching, did a teacher training session with two of the teachers that lived in the main, one of the first like points, the main like hubs in the mountains, taught there. And then I started, I mean, I have these bits of paper because I didn't want to write on my phone, but I started making all these notes, but I had these, I have like bits of paper from the kids' classes. So then I was like writing notes about that, analysing how long they took to draw a circle and like just like filming and observing the real like concentration that you're emotionally connecting with numbers. Because when we just write the number three, we can scribble it. There's no heart in it. Whereas when you're making art, you're like really...
It's really different.
It's really different.
It's a whole new level of depth.
It's a whole new level of depth. So I'm trying to like... That's what all these notes are about. Like my own experience with connecting with maths and how it's helping me understand my own mind, how my own brain works. Like the ricochet of understanding different... Like I've always played music, but I've never understood how it works. Now I'm like... Now like I'm learning the violin. Learning the violin. And I'm Sian, the... woman that runs the Irish sessions, she's like explaining me a little bit and teaching me a little bit. I got this violin yesterday, I was playing with it and just going up the scales, and because you're holding it here, you can feel the vibrations. So then as I was playing I think it was a C and a D, I'm not, again, I don't really know, but you can hear them going together, but then you can also feel because the two notes are hitting together, but feeling it there, I'm like, that's maths in motion in my jaw. And I'm like, that's such a cool way to learn maths through feeling. Sure. So I'm trying to like,
oh my goodness.
But it's just, anyway, sorry, I'm just sort of like rambling.
No, it's
that's
beautiful.
Really exciting.
You ramble, darling, it's lovely. It's intoxicating. But the because what we don't appreciate and people in science can actually show us much easier is how, when everything vibrates, this is not a science lesson because I'm not a scientist, but everything vibrates and it vibrates at a rate and it vibrates at a colour and colour vibrates everything. And I find it very difficult to try and translate that.
Into
but I
words,
know, I know that as a, somebody with synesthesia, when somebody speaks to me, their name has a sound vibration and a colour to it. So when Brooke speaks to me, you are you're a wonderful mixture of a very like, it's like black with orange flashes in it.
Oh, really?
So yeah. So you're thinking, oh, but honestly, it, the depth of you when I hear you speak, but when you speak, your voice will sound in colour.
So I can't see that, but I know friends, you and others who can, and it's just, I was like, what colour's cat? And I think,
yellow.
Kaff's
yellow.
Yeah, that's what my friend Caitlin says as well. Yellow.
Kaff's instantly bright yellow, like a little sunbeam. And the shape, again, is different and when someone speaks.
What's Pat's? Or Patsy?
Pat's, Pat's. Well, it's Pat's and Patsy are different. Patsy's has got silver and gold and yellow. Pat's is not, Pat's is a bit like Kaff actually.
Yeah.
It's got very much, it's got a trumpet kind of look to it. So, but a butter yellow. Butter yellow.
Nice.
Yeah.
Not orange.
No.
Not like ginger.
No. These are my favourite colours though.
I'm
always drawn to tealy blues and turquoise and. They just make me emotional.
And it's your eyes. Well, your T-shirt's basically the same colour as your eyes.
Oh, well, there we go.
And it goes so well with your hair.
Oh, there we go.
It does.
But these aren't, but they make me happy. And that's the thing about colour. What we underestimate the value of colour because colour
so important.
Change your mood.
Yeah.
So I dress, you know, you've been watching me for months, but I'm hoping. but see this instantly makes me want to cry. Because it's so full of joy. This whole colour combination is so full of joy, but that doesn't mean that colours have, this is all joy and all the other colours are not. They have different wavelengths.
Yeah.
And when anybody who studies energy. They know the wavelength of colour. They know the wavelength of number.
Mm. That's really cool. I was thinking as you were talking that there is also, you can print with sound.
Print.
So yeah, you can cool. you can print into fabric with sound.
Really?
Yeah, wow. I've got a friend that can tell you more about it.
Oh, cool, yeah.
So there might be different, there might be a connection there with what you might be able to print, or I don't know, yeah, somewhere there's a sonic thing that pushes, yeah, imprint
we're
into. Yeah,
we're at the birth of all this understanding. Yeah. Mm. There are people out there that know it, but what you're getting is, what I'm loving about this is, you get intuitive messages and you trust them
and you're following it, yeah,
and you so just cool. trust, you go, oh well, I'll let Deborah lead me because Deborah knows.
Yeah.
So it's not about Brooke knowing, it's about Deborah,
yes,
who you're channeling, if you like.
Yeah.
And you're, it's not as woo-woo as it sounds, trust me on that. We're in a very different time in the world where this sort of thing is becoming a language that we trust, and because we intuitively we feel it.
Yeah, you're following your gut, you're following your know, intuition.
And it's not the ego that has to make the decision.
No.
And it's so egoless. It's like the ego goes, shh, go away. Sit down. Come here.
Yeah.
I've got this. This is fine because Deborah's showing me
what's
going on. And then Deborah will take you into different parts of this and open. You mentioned doors earlier beautifully. Mm. And the doors just open.
Yeah. I'll show you, talking about that then, really quickly.
You don't have to be really quick.
Okay, so, and everything else, you tell me about this thingy.
I will, the
vibrations.
Yeah.
And the synesthesia thing is something I'm really fascinated in now, because if people have synesthesia and they're like, they're not my colours, it's like, just change them. Yeah. It still works.
Yeah.
So anyway, Carl Jung and Leonardo da Vinci, I'm just reading about Leonardo da Vinci now, and oh my God, I'm completely in love. He was like gay and he used to cut his tunics above the knee and dye them pink. What? And apparently he was just a beautiful, beautiful young guy.
Yeah.
Amazing. Anyway, but he was so into theatre. I didn't realise how into theatre he was. And he used to like design lots of his flying machines, but actually for stage productions. So like, and then that got him into the fascination of the flight of birds and like discovering things that like, way ahead of his time.
Yeah.
But the fantasticalness of theatre helped him get into that world and just ask him questions. So that's been really an inspiration. Mm. And
it makes you do a deep dive, doesn't it?
Oh, just gosh.
Yeah.
Yes.
The research is fun.
The research is so fun.
Just keep following it.
But it makes you juicy.
Hmm?
It makes you juicy. Your mind gets really juicy.
Yeah, I can't stop thinking about it. And then with Carl Jung, something again, that's like, I can't really quite understand Carl Jung, but parts of it, one of the things last year when I was reading about, there's a book called Man and His Symbols. Mm. And
I've got that.
It's so good. And it's like essays from his students. Mm. So it's a bit more accessible. He edited them.
Mm.
And then there's one of it was that with the animus and the anima. Mm. And like when you have an animal representation of a side of your soul and you give it enough care and attention so as to, you could paint it, write stories, craft it, sculpt it, do anything that brings it to life.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's like something like, messages or information from the deeper sources will come up to the surface.
Wow.
And like, and I was like, that's exactly what's happened with Deborah. I was doing it for like kind of fun, but also processing trauma and theatrical. And I painted her on paper. I danced as her. I wrote stories about her. And then the maths came up and I'm like, Carl Jung was onto something because that's exactly what's happened. And then with the synchronicities thing, with following the zebra. So I was, like I was saying, I was in Nepal. So this was at like February, March time. And then in May, I got a bit sick. And I was like, for 7 days, I was like, again, laying in a bunk bed in a hostel. And I was like, I'm so unwell. And it was coming up to Jack in the Green back in Hayes. And I was like, I should just go home because it'd be so nice to just go back to home and just go to Jack in the Green, have a nice day.
Mm-hmm.
Like right now, you're just laying like a corpse in a hostel bed, in a bunk bed with shared bathroom, not feeling very well at all. I was like, go home. But then I had been in this ancient city called Bhaktapur, which is the ancient capital city of Nepal.
Right.
And I was like, well, if I'm going up the mountain, Deborah's going to come with me, because in the story, Deborah had already goes up the mountain.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to try and find in a shop or like in a little market, a small sculpture of a horse with wings. and I'll paint it into a zebra, and I'll paint it into a zebra. But it's like, there were so many sculptures. There were monkeys, horses, like Buddhas, elephants, loads of things, so much. And I was going around, and there was like wooden ones, metal ones, clay ones. And I was trying to find, and I couldn't find a horse with wings. I was like, come on, Pegasus, it's not that difficult. Yeah. But I couldn't find one. Mm. Anyway, so I kind of gave up on that. And then a few days later, about a week or so later, I met these two girls. And I was painting, but I was painting maths. Mm. And they were like, oh, what are you painting? Because I was at this temple and there was that slow stuff going on. And I said, oh, I'm painting maths. And I showed them the book and I explained. Mm. And then I got their numbers. There were these two lovely, lovely Nepalese girls. And I got their number. And then we hung out for a little bit and said goodbye. And then I was on my way from Bhaktapur to Pokhara. And I passed through Kathmandu for one day. And I was there and I had dinner and I was like, oh, I should see those girls. I should I texted them. I was like, hey, girls, do you want to meet up? And it was like in the evening. And I was like, yeah, can you meet up in 45 minutes? And down the bottom, down the south of the city. I was like, yes, sure, okay. So I jumped in the back of a scooter and then I got there and we were having dinner. And then, and they hadn't seen this book. They had just known about my maths. Mm. And then we had dinner and then one of them was like, Brooke, I have something to give you. She goes, it's really weird. She was like, it's weird. So don't worry. Well, actually, can I have one of your pieces of paper?
Yes. Just
take one.
Just take one. Yeah.
And this is perfect. Literally wrapped up in a lined piece of notepad paper.
Yeah.
She pulled out of her handbag. She was like, oh, hi, Brooke. She goes, it's a bit weird. It's from my mum. My mum wanted me to give you this. Oh, wow. Wanted me to give you this.
Oh.
I'd never met her mum. I barely met her.
Yeah.
Barely knew them. And she was like, it's a bit weird, but my mum wanted me to give you this. And then she had passed me this thing of paper. And inside was a horse with wings. The very thing I had literally been looking for.
Oh, wow.
And they had no clue about Deborah the Zebra. They hardly knew me. And this girl's mum. Nepalese mum gives it, and she was like, I was looking at it, I was like, and even every time I'm like snotting everywhere, my whole body, like even now I can feel it in my shoulders.
Yeah.
It was so spooky.
Yeah.
And she was like, and it stunk, it's really smelled of like, it was quite smelly, it smelled like smoke or like ash or something, uh-huh. And it was really dirty, it was dirt all over it. So it wasn't like something clean, it was just this odd dirty thing. And she was like, oh, I'm sorry, I it's weird. The girl was apologetic.
Yeah.
And I was like, no,
but
this is
to do this.
Incredible. Yeah. Yes. And then I showed them the picture. I was like, I was like, this is incredible, because I said, I've got this zebra with wings that I've been looking. And they were like, no. And I had this sketchbook with me, and they're like, what? And I was like, yeah, I was like, my whole thing. I turned into a flying horse zebra thing. And they were like, no way. And the girl had said that, and I met up with the mum, and then about a month or so later,
mm-hmm.
And I'm like, why did you give me this? And she goes, I just felt it. And the daughter had literally, in 45 minutes, that plan comes together. And she goes, oh, I'm going to meet this guy from England. And the mum was like, you need to give him this. And got it out, put it out of a drawer or a cupboard.
Gave it.
And the girl was like, no, I don't want to give it to him. She took it out of the bag. And the mum was like, put it in her bag and said, you need to give it to her. And she said, and she kept putting it out of the bag. And the mum said, I had to put it in her bag. And I said, don't ask questions, just give it to him.
Yeah, just do
what
it.
What
yeah.
the hell? So I got it. And then I did paint it into Deborah the Zebra.
Yay.
So when I was laying sick, and then I had already been given that, and I was laying sick, and I was like, I've got to go home. And I was like, oh no, I have to go up the mountain.
You do.
Because the universe has literally given
it's
me
just,
this. I just cannot get over it.
Massive sign. It's like a neon, isn't it?
It was
while you're feeling really sorry for yourself and saying, oh, I need to go and do something which is really easy, which is go home. and the path is hard because the mountain's sheer and now I can't do it. And actually, what the universe is trying to say to us with all these wonderful messages from lots of different people is keep going.
Just keep going.
Yeah. Keep going.
Mm. Yeah. So then, I was like, right, Brooke, get on with it, go up the mountain. So I got on and planned it.
Mm-hmm.
And then made my way with this book. Mm-hmm. And I started writing this, as I was walking, I started writing an essay, because now Multicolor Matter is going to be published in a proper academic journal at the end of the year called the Association of Teaching Mathematics. They're like publishing it in a proper academic journal, and they're using the artwork for the front cover, and it gets sent to like loads of math teachers in England, and it's referenced internationally. Yeah. Yes. It's like a proper validation. I'm like, what? This is completely bonkers. So, and then a big charity called National Numeracy, whilst I was going up the mountain, it was May, which is National Numeracy Month. And on the 21st of May was National Numeracy Day in England. And I just so happened to reach Everest Base Camp on National Numeracy Day. I carried this piece of material to each school that I went to. I took this piece of material and the kids learned how to do it. And then they would add their I'll put that bit there.
It's a wonderful fact. It's a fishing rod.
Well, it's what Martha Giraffe was on. Giraffe was on this. Wow. And then they all added their maths to it. I waved it at Everest Base Camp on National Numeracy. I was like, this is so ridiculous. And then, now it's just, that's it.
But it's synchronised. Everything comes in. This is why math is so important and why we mustn't be afraid of it. But it's you finding a language, because it makes me really distressed. In fact, I've said this in my keynote speech. There's a big chunk of the world that does not get math.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do not get it. And it's a part of our language. It's a part of a stroke.
I do, yeah.
It's a part of our language that is really integral. But while we only know certain ways to do it, in other words, kind of a stiff way of doing it, if our brains can't assimilate that information, then we feel like we're outside of the box. I always felt like I was outside the class looking in.
Yeah.
And I'd see people do math with such my brother, my father, engineer brains. Mm-hmm. And me on the other side of the spectrum, not in the least bit, I kept looking at it and thinking, I'm failing. Mm. I'm terribly failing. Mm. Whereas you bringing this, which can unite the other side of humanity who don't get it.
Yeah.
It
can translate that into music and translate that because I always look at music, I think, people who play instruments, they're
sight
fascinating.
Reading.
They are incredible. But even somebody who can read the language that is the musical note, I look at that. I'm saying it on Sunday, actually. Why didn't I learn how to play an instrument? I wish I'd had, and all those regrets.
Yeah.
Whereas this, at any stage in your life,
could
introduce you to all of these things in a language that we can, which is very affording and very accessible.
Mm. Yeah.
Is that 91, by the way?
Oh, it's it. This is 10.
1. Oh, 1 and 0.
Okay, but it's because I used two different black markers, so that's why it's purple. Okay. But it would have been 91. Yeah, it would have been 910. Because there's a zero in the middle, white. But you got it.
I'm gonna keep learning.
But yeah, no, and what I'm hoping is this is exactly it. Like, I'm reading this book called, a book called Pedagogy of the Oppressed by Paulo Freire. Yeah.
Yes.
And
to read, I haven't read it yet.
Somewhere. And
it's how we learn.
It's just all about how the education system is so tailored to keep the world rigid.
Yes.
And it's just like, whereas actually I now through painting patterns, like seeing maths in a completely different way and seeing it as this fluid, movable thing. And it's not a case of finding the right answer. It's all about trying to find balance. Mm. But in school, we have to find the right answer. So like we are constantly pressured to find. Yeah, I just think that the children whose minds will learn this or learn like this will. That's six.
No,
best for us,
it's not that.
I love that.
India is covered in these beautiful,
nice patterns. Yeah.
Patterns everywhere you go, and we brought them back here. William Morris and the other people came back during this time, and they brought them back here.
Mm-hmm.
So all these designs everywhere you go across India and the Indian subcontinent and all the the neighbours, this is everywhere.
Mm.
It's absolutely everywhere you go. Not just this pattern, but all of the patterns that mean math. Oh, I'm sure that when these were written, this was a language they knew that was possibly unearthed again, darling, haven't you?
Who knows? I'm just excited to see what it can. It'll be so nice. And like, now I'm getting emails from teachers and being like, I tried this with my year nines and tens. And at first it was a bit confusing because it's a new method, but eventually seeing them connect with the language that they finally felt was theirs. Mm-hmm. That they didn't, because they don't like maths.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're like, it's magical. And like, I've got this email that just has, and it's from a teacher saying, it's magical. And then another teacher was like, I used it with the 2 year six children who really struggled with their times tables. But she was like, I've got a big piece of paper out and paint. And then they did their times tables all the way up to 80. And they were so into it and filled the page and ran out of paper. Wow. And then this little boy, year six, went to the year four class and taught the year fours. So he was so moved by it. And that's literally how I'm feeling, which is why I can't stop doing it and just exploring it. Mm-hmm. So I'm, which is why I'm like, just keep following the zebra, keep following the zebra. And if people want to, I'm typing it up. Sometimes it's like, less mathsy, sometimes it's more like psychological, sometimes a bit whimsical, but I am writing on my website like an ongoing wandering essay called Following a Zebra. So if people want to like find it, they can. I'm going to now and then hopefully update it just as a way of like recording it and having people contact me. Because the other thing, because I'm not with a university, I'm literally just on my own. So if people are like, Brooke, I've got something that I think might, I'd like to talk to you about this. Let's meet up and talk about this. And have you considered this? Or la 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 la. I'm so up for it because I don't have that network that you have at university, which is in some ways a good thing because I'm not being shaped by the university. But I do feel like I'm now at a point where I was literally walking along the seafront the other week, walking along, and for like 15 minutes, I found myself singing, all I want to do is talk about maths, philosophy, educational methods. All I want to do is talk about. And I was like, that's genuinely all I want to talk about. So if anyone wants to talk about maths, philosophy, education methods.
I know some people that will definitely. I've got a really dear friend in Sutton. She's an art teacher, a head of art in a school in Kent in Ramsgate, and she would love to meet you, I'm sure, but need to make the introductions. And you can go in there. They're very forward-thinking.
Yeah, cool.
In their school.
Cool.
Oh, wow.
So that's so half what I'm doing. That's a long story all the way up to Everest and back. But that's
amazing.
What I'm doing.
Amazing.
And Deborah's still alive and she still puffs at Leonard's.
Yeah, of course.
But she's everywhere you go. But Deborah's everywhere. Mm. Deborah's not contained.
No.
Deborah's everywhere and she flies everywhere. She knows exactly what's going on in the rest of the world and where else you've got to go. Because this, as that woman at the front of the talk with the mathematicians, she said, this is just the and this is just the start of something else. And the fact that it's gone into chemistry again, these are lofty subjects that people who are possibly more right brain would struggle with and say, oh, but I'm art and poetry and you know, textiles, I'm this sort of person. And actually we're not round, we're not half circles, we're round. It's just finding the language.
These are people I need to introduce you to, but
but there's so many people. Definitely I'm gonna send this to Emma. She will absolutely gobble this up.
You blow me away. I can't believe
that's why it's good that you didn't know
honestly, and where you're going with it, it's just incredible. And I love this. Well done for treasuring it and carrying it around and not losing it in the pool anywhere.
I know.
I'd have been so worried about losing that.
Now I'm back, I'm like, okay.
Just cling on to it.
It needs to be turned into a, I was going to say microfiche.
If anyone knows how to, that's something I could, because I've been told I need to archive it properly and scan it. So if any of your how to scan it properly and archive. I've taken pictures on my phone, but they're not,
what's
they're
like that?
Limited. The Observer building, they've got a scanner.
Oh, like have
a,
they?
Yeah, where you can put a book and
that's
great.
Cool.
And I'm sure we'll get them to do that free of charge because no pressure, but this is we've got people that are so resourceful in the town, they're going to need somebody to help them
support, absolutely,
hold those resources big for time in memoriam. It's really important.
Thank you for having me.
Darling, thank you
you've
yeah I'm blown away. I've got so many colours and shapes in my head now.
So this translates to art. I'm not finished quite yet. So when, I don't know where I'm going with this, but when people paint in certain colours and certain shapes, especially abstract art, you know, like you pointed out there, to me that zings, you know, it has a
resonance.
Yeah, it has a resonance. Vibration. Yeah. And you feel like you can't walk away from it. That's why some geometric shapes, I see things in geometric shape.
Mm-hmm.
So when somebody speaks or somebody makes music, it's often these geometric shapes bouncing around the room. It's like, woo, woo, woo. Not always geometric, but any shape.
Mm.
So the fact that you've bought shapes.
Yes, yeah.
The shape, the colour, all translates to the number. It's phenomenal.
Have you heard of Hilmer af Klint?
Yeah. Oh, you're talking about Klint?
No. Hilma af Klint.
No.
Oh, she was a queer artist in the 1800s from Sweden, I think it was. Oh, oh my, I'll send you some pictures.
She
was on another level, and she was in the 1800s, and she again claimed to have these visions and painted these giant, humongous, beautiful, stunning paintings.
Mm.
And someone told me about her last year when they saw this, and I went to see her exhibition in this gallery. And I walked in, and I've never felt like that going into an exhibition. She kept meticulous notes about what she was writing, because she was like, I'm painting the atom, I'm painting the life force of a human, of male and female, and the child, and the mix of the two, and the evolution of energy. Ooh. And it's absolutely beautiful, but art history kind of didn't include her because she was a woman, and they never really exhibited her work properly in her life. She died in the 1940s, and she wrote that she didn't want her art to be shown until 20 years after she died, because she was like, if they don't want to see it now, then I'm going to put it away and it can be shown in 20 years. And then the 1960s came, and they ancestors, and they were all like, woo! And they you look at them, you're like,
woman of time.
She was literally seeing this just completely on it, organically. And if you can try and see, they move her stuff around, unlike anything else. And then when I went in, I had just started questioning the chemistry thing. I was like, I think, again, I wasn't interested in chemistry. I don't use chemistry. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand it. Didn't understand the periodic table. But I was like, I think there's a chemistry thing I need to do. Mm-hmm. Went there. And I went in the exhibition. You know, there's usually a path like to go through it. But I went in it backwards because it was in Spain. I didn't read the signs properly. I didn't know where it meant to go. And then went in, and it was the last room, which was not the first room we had to go in. It was this little thing, and she was painting the atom, which is all chemistry. And I walked in, I was like, oh my God, she was literally trying to do the same thing. So I started writing her letters like, dear Hilma, I'm at your exhibition and I'm trying to write paint chemistry, and I've just realised that you did it too. If you have any tips, let me know. And then la 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 la, so then the next book is dedicated to Hilma. And I feel like there's a way to do music, because Leonardo was a violinist and a singer, and I'm going to dedicate that book to Leonardo da Vinci. But if I eventually get, I feel like music's going to be a tough one to crack, because there's so much in it. But I think it's very shape-based and colour, kind of the two. Because it'd be so nice to go, because I just feel like music, the staves and the lines, it's so linear. To me, I've never connected with it as an art form. Like, that should be an art form.
Yeah.
It's the translation of an art form, but it doesn't look like the sound. Whereas if you could go to like a concert, and they project a visual representation of what's being played, deaf people would be able to appreciate, be like, oh, I love Bach, because it looks similar to this other Swedish composer. Or like, oh, I love what Mozart looks like. I love, like, the Claire de Lune, what that looks like in notation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the vibration as well.
Yeah, I just feel like...
they would feel that.
Yeah.
They can't hear.
Yes, exactly.
And that feeling of your, you know, on the violin, you just think that might come in as well at some point. Yeah.
I feel like I'm a bit limited in that area, like, knowledge-wise, but I feel like
you're getting it. We went to a Philip Glass concert. The whole place was lime green, purple, silver, kite-shaped, dancing shapes as these people were playing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a special needs orchestra. And so everybody was either autism or had a disability.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what I was going to see. I had no idea. I just went in and I came...
Yeah. moving.
I had tears running up down my cheeks, and I went into the bathroom, and there was a woman in the loo, and she was also crying. I said, "Oh, are you okay?" And she went, "Are you okay?" I said, "No, the whole place, the auditorium was alive." Mm-hmm. And she said, "I thought that." And then people behind me grumbling because it's had something about David Bowie heroes, and people thought in the title, they thought it'd all be about David Bowie.
Okay.
And when you listen to Philip Glass, that's not, and when you listen, he unpacks really extraordinarily.
Yeah.
So when I hear people like that, it's like, can you not hear what I can hear?
Mm.
It's so strong, it's so vibrant. But yeah, music, you're going into, you're unpacking a whole big crate of.
Yeah. And that you're
fantastic.
You're brave with it.
Sorry, I'm lost for words. I'm really lost for words because what you're doing is you're going to be highlighting a world that a lot of people can't tell you about. I start talking about this, I sound like a crazy woman.
Yeah.
I'm not crazy.
No.
But what you're doing is illustrating that when we connect on all of this in an energetic level with shape and sound and colour, it's a very different world. Mm. It is very different. Oh, bless you for doing that. Sorry.
I'm trying.
Don't apologize.
No, you don't need to try. You just need to allow because it will come through you.
Yeah.
It will all come through.
And I think every time, you know, you've said all of these different disciplines, which, yeah, people are experts
the
in.
Word. The discipline.
The discipline, isn't it?
Well, if it wasn't a discipline.
Yeah, exactly. It's not because people can have a musical experience without being experts in music, but there is this idea where you get a capital M or a capital A if it's architecture or whatever it is.
Mm.
And it's like you're saying, I don't know, and I'm going to find out, and I'm going to read it my way and then translate it through this and whatever happens next with that. And I think that's really adventurous and
coming from a
brave
different angle.
And yeah, like following that is actually, yeah, just so inspiring. So yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks.
Gosh, it's been so moving.
Yeah.
There'll be more of these.
Sorry, you don't have to hold it.
Okay, I like holding it.
They'll be vibrating.
It is, yeah, yeah.
There'll be more of these because this will be the first in our book.
Yes.
Yeah,
please come back.
I want to come back and talk to you about the next thing, which once it's all protected,
sure,
I can like show it properly.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Because that's something that I feel like is really exciting.
Thank you so much. Wow, what a woof.
Woof indeed.
I'm going to say woof because what can you say when you're sitting here in presence of this?
Thank you.
Darling, thank you so much.
Cheers.
What a joy. This will go out to the town and beyond. Our town has
plenty.
Absolutely.